Pledge night at Delta Gamma was infamous for its intensity, but this year we decided to up the ante. As one of the emerging frat leaders, I, Tom, was tasked by the seniors with orchestrating a prank that would be talked about for years. The plan was simple, a fake kidnapping to test the mettle of our new pledges. It was meant to be controlled chaos, a scary but safe rite of passage. Only, I had no idea it would turn into a nightmare. The night was cool and the moon was obscured by clouds, casting an eerie gloom over the abandoned warehouse we had chosen as the stage for our prank. The pledges, blindfolded and disoriented, were led inside one by one, their hands bound loosely in front of them. Their nervous laughter echoed off the walls, mixed with the feigned stern voices of us brothers acting as their captors.
Keep it moving, pledges! Tonight you'll prove if you're worthy of Delta Gamma!
I shouted, trying to sound menacing. We had staged the warehouse with creepy props, old chains hanging from the ceiling, dim lighting flickering intermittently, and sounds of eerie whispers played from a hidden speaker. It was all theatrics. That is when five other seniors entered on bikes, disguised as gang members. They started shouting, pulled out guns, and made the few seniors who were there run away. It was all part of the prank, to make the pledges feel that our prank had gone wrong and they were in actual trouble. But we didn't know what scared pledges would do. The atmosphere shifted when Mike, one of the seniors, climbed a stack of crates to pretend to be running away from the biker gang. In his zeal, he lost his footing, crashing down with a terrifying thud. The sound of his fall was sickening. As he lay motionless, a pool of blood began to form around his head. Panic set in among the pledges and brothers alike.
Oh my God, he's really hurt!
Someone yelled. The scene descended into chaos, the lines between our staged fright and real horror blurring rapidly. In the confusion, I noticed one of the pledges, Paul, his blindfold hanging around his neck, eyes wide with terror. He was breathing heavily, his gaze darting around as if looking for an escape. Before I could reassure him it was a prank gone wrong, his survival instincts kicked in. Paul scrambled to his feet, his hands still bound, and stumbled over to where a piece of metal lay among the debris from Mike's fall. He grabbed it, holding it like a weapon.
Stay back!
He screamed, his voice cracking with fear.
Paul, calm down, man!
I tried to approach him, my hands raised in a calming gesture, but fear had taken a hold of him, morphing into something dark and uncontrollable. He lunged forward, swinging the metal with a wild energy. The first strike caught James, another brother, across the face. Blood sprayed as he fell, his scream cut short by the brutal impact. The sight of blood seemed to drive Paul further into his frenzy, his actions desperate and savage.
Paul, stop!
But my shouts were drowned out by the chaos. Every attempt to subdue him was met with violent resistance. Each swing of his makeshift weapon was more frantic than the last, each connecting with a sickening crunch of bone and flesh. The warehouse, once filled with staged horrors, was now a scene of genuine terror. Brothers were down, groaning in pain or worse, unmoving. The pledges, freed from their blindfolds by the commotion, huddled together, watching in horror as Paul, driven by fear and mistaken belief, became the monster we had pretended to be. In that moment, the air filled with a metallic scent of blood and the sound of desperate pleas for sanity. I realized I had to find a way to end this before anyone else got hurt or killed. As Paul swung wildly, his eyes darting with paranoia and his breathing ragged, I ducked behind a column, my mind racing for a solution. The situation had spiraled out of control, our prank turning into a horrific reality. Each cry and thud of metal striking flesh hammered home the direness of the predicament. I knew I had to act fast.
Paul, listen to me!
I attempted again, shouting over the chaos, trying to pierce the veil of his terror.
Nobody is trying to hurt you. It's all a setup.
But reasoning with him was futile. His terror had morphed into a frenzied survival instinct that saw threats in every shadow and every movement. As I peeked from behind the column, I saw him turn toward me, his expression twisted in confusion and rage. Realizing I was exposed, I quickly retreated, but not before our eyes met. A fleeting moment where I saw not just the fear, but also the betrayal he felt. He probably thought we had truly meant to harm him. In his state, Paul was unpredictable and extremely dangerous. Another brother tried to approach him from behind, hoping to disarm him. But Paul sensed him and reacted with terrifying speed. He swung the piece of metal, connecting with the brother's leg with a crack that echoed through the warehouse. The brother collapsed with a scream, clutching his leg in agony. The air was thick with panic and the sharp tang of blood. It was clear that if we didn't subdue Paul soon, we might not make it out without serious casualties, or worse. I scanned the room for something to use, my gaze settling on a thick rope used as part of the decor. An idea formed, desperate but necessary. I grabbed the rope and motioned to two of my remaining uninjured brothers. With a quick plan whispered between us, we spread out, encircling Paul with care not to draw his attention prematurely. The idea was to restrain him without causing further injury, to him or us. Timing was everything. As Paul turned to fend off another imaginary attacker, we moved. I approached from the front, keeping his focus on me, while the others approached from his sides.
"Paul, we don't want to hurt you," I said, keeping my tone steady, my hands visible and open.
His hesitation gave us the moment we needed. The brothers lunged, catching him off guard. We tackled him to the ground, the impact knocking the metal bar away. He struggled fiercely, screaming incoherently about betrayal and traps. With the rope, we quickly tied his hands, securing him firmly. His screams slowly turned into sobs, the fight draining out of him as the reality of the situation began to dawn on him. Once Paul was secured and no longer a threat, we turned our attention to the injured. The air was a cacophony of groans and urgent voices. I pulled out my phone, the screen cracked but functional, and dialed 911. The call went through, and I hastily explained the situation, my voice shaky with adrenaline and relief. Emergency services arrived quickly, their sirens cutting through the silence that had settled over the warehouse. As paramedics tended to the wounded, police officers took statements. Paul was gently led away, a blanket around his shoulders, his eyes empty of the manic terror, but now filled with a dawning regret. Sitting on the back of an ambulance, watching the flurry of activity, the weight of what had happened settled on me. Our prank, meant to be a bonding experience, had turned into a traumatic event that would leave scars on all of us. Guilt gnawed at me as I considered how quickly things had escalated and how badly they could have ended. It was a Friday night like any other at Delta Psi, with the bass thumping through the grand old frat house and red cups littering nearly every surface. As one of the senior members, I, Damon, had seen my fair share of wild nights, but this one was special. It was our annual pledge invitation party, and everyone was buzzing with a mix of excitement and beer-fueled bravado. Jason, the pledge in question, was a quiet guy, not your typical frat star. Earlier that week, some of the guys thought it would be hilarious to make him wear a grotesque mask, a gnarled, twisted face that looked like it belonged in a horror movie, and parade him around campus. It was just a prank, we thought. Harmless fun, but the look in Jason's eyes when the mask came off said otherwise. It was a mixture of humiliation and something else. Something darker. The party was in full swing when I stepped outside for some air, leaving the cacophony of shouts and music behind me. The backyard was cooler, the moon a dim light flittering through the branches of the old oaks that surrounded our property. That's when I heard it, the softest whisper of a footstep behind me. I turned, expecting to see one of my brothers sneaking out with a freshman, but there was no one there. Chalking it up to the alcohol, I headed back inside. The hallway seemed unusually dark, the lights flickering as if straining against a sudden drain of power. A chill ran down my spine, the hairs on my arms standing on end. I shook off the feeling and pushed the heavy door to the main party room open. The scene inside had changed. The music still played, but there was a palpable tension in the air. I found Jake, one of my frat brothers, pale and shaken, staring at something on the floor. It was Sam, another brother, lying motionless, a replica of the grotesque mask strapped to his face. A bolt, a damn crossbow bolt, was lodged in his chest.
"What the hell happened?"
I gasped, my heart pounding as I knelt down beside him. Jake couldn't form words, just pointed towards the darkened corridor that led to the back rooms.
"He's here, Jason, with a crossbow,"
Jake finally stammered. The reality of the situation hit me like a brick. This was no longer a party. It was a hunting ground. The next few hours were a blur of chaos and fear. We found three more of our brothers, each isolated, each wearing a mask, and each cruelly picked off from the shadows with deadly precision. The party dissolved into a frantic scramble for safety as everyone realized that the frat house had turned into a trap. I rallied a group of guys, including Jake and Tyler, our chapter president, to barricade the doors and call for help. But the phone lines were dead, and our cell signals were mysteriously jammed.
"We need to stick together and find a way out," I urged, trying to keep my voice steady.
Jake nodded, gripping a baseball bat with white-knuckled hands.
"Let's do it. Let's get this psycho."
We moved cautiously, jumping at every shadow, every sound. As we rounded a corner, a figure stepped out from a doorway, the dim light glinting off the tip of a crossbow. It was Jason, his face obscured by that same grotesque mask. He didn't say a word, just raised the crossbow and fired. Tyler screamed as he went down, a bolt through his shoulder pinning him to the wall. Jake and I scattered, diving for cover, but I knew we were outmatched and outmaneuvered. In the chaos, a plan formed in my desperate mind. If we could get to the attic, we could maybe get a signal out, or at least barricade ourselves in until help arrived. I motioned to Jake, and together we made a break for the narrow staircase, dodging another of Jason's bolts that thudded into the wood where my head had been seconds before. We were halfway up the stairs when an explosion rocked the house. The smell of gasoline and smoke hit us, and it was clear Jason had set the frat house on fire. With no way out, we pushed forward, the heat building behind us, the sound of the fire roaring like a beast unleashed. The attic was stifling, the air thick with dust and the growing stench of smoke from below. Jake and I slammed the door shut, pushing an old dresser against it with trembling hands. The crackle and pop of the fire grew louder. Outside, the flames painted the windows orange, the heat pressing in like an unwelcomed crowd.
"We're gonna cook up here, aren't we?"
Jake's voice was barely a whisper, raw with fear.
"No, we're not,"
I replied, more to convince myself than him.
"We're gonna make it out. We have to."
My hands fumbled with my phone again, desperation giving way to a sliver of hope as I noticed a bar of signal, faint but present. I dialed 911, the phone ringing through to emergency services. I explained our situation in hurried, gasping sentences, the attack, the fire, our location. Soon, the sound of sirens in the distance offered a lifeline. But with the relief came the stark reality of our immediate danger. The fire was spreading, the heat unbearable. Smoke seeped into the attic, making it hard to see, harder to breathe.
We need to break a window. Get some air.
I choked out, my eyes stinging.
Together, we staggered to the nearest window, pushing against the old glass. It gave way with a crash, fresh air rushing in, battling the smoke that roiled around us. Below, the flickering lights of fire trucks and police cars pierced the night, a chaotic ballad of rescue and urgency. I leaned out of the window, shouting for help, my voice hoarse. A firefighter spotted us, raising his radio to call for a ladder. Relief was so close, yet the fire was closer, licking at the structure of the house, threatening to bring us down with it. Then, a loud series of crashes from below made us jump. Through the smoke, a figure emerged at the bottom of the attic stairs. It was Jason, the mask gone, his face a canvas of pain and rage. He staggered, clutching a side where blood seeped through his shirt.
"You don't understand,"
he gasped, the fight draining from him.
"They made me a monster."
I stared at him, the chaos around us narrowing into the sharp point of this final confrontation.
"You didn't have to do this, Jason. You could have walked away." "Could I?"
His laugh was a hollow sound, broken and sad. He took a step forward, then another, before collapsing, his body giving way, succumbing to his injuries and the smoke filling his lungs. The room spun, the heat a tangible weight on my chest. Jake and I retreated to the window, the ladder finally arriving. Firefighters climbed towards us. I took one last look at Jason, lying motionless on the floor. His plan had ended in his own destruction, a tragic footnote to a night of horror. We were helped onto the ladder, descending into the cool night air, away from the heat and the death. Sirens wailed, lights flashed, and I realized how close we had come to not making it out alive. The ground felt unreal beneath my feet, the normal world a stark contrast to the hell we had just escaped. In the days that followed, the investigation would reveal the depths of Jason's planning, the lengths to which he had gone to exact his revenge. The masks, the crossbow, the fire. It was all a meticulously crafted nightmare born from a moment of humiliation that he just couldn't move past. I survived, but like the charred remains of the frat house, I knew I'd never be the same.